Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we read our favorite books and watch their adaptations. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Tinashe.
And last episode, we discussed the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, which is the fifth film in the Harry Potter series. And in this episode, we discuss the sixth book in the series, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. We'll share our thoughts on the book, including what we liked, what we didn't like, what surprised us, and some extra little things we think are worthy of mentioning. But before we get into that, let's just have some news from the Harry Potter world. That is very true. I did it last time. But anyway, so yeah, let's talk about some news from the Harry Potter world, Tinashe. I think the most biggest one anyway has so far been Hagrid, or Robbie Coltrane, the actor,
yes,
passing. Yeah, your thoughts or sentiments on that?
Yeah, rest in peace to him. I think we all grew up on Harry Potter as Harry Potter fans. The way I actually found out, I was traveling during that time when it happened. So when I came back, it was my mom who I thought never really listened to me when I was obsessing over Harry Potter, but apparently she really understood her daughter, and she's like, oh, there's this Harry Potter actor who died. I'm like, who? My brain was going to Daniel Radcliffe, but she's like, no, I know Daniel Radcliffe. I wouldn't break it to you like this. Yeah. But then, yeah, I'm like, oh. And Audrey, to find out that Audrey knew and she was just going to break the news to me over.
To be fair, at the time we were scheduled to meet a little bit sooner than now, for example, because it's been a few weeks now, a week or 4 weeks. I don't know how many weeks it's been since he passed. But at the time, I think it kind of just came through, and then I thought maybe you might have seen it, so I thought we were going to discuss it. I don't know why I didn't rush to be like, did you see the news? But I think it's just, you know, something sad just to think about, because he is one of the major, like after Alan Rickman, after Helen McCrory, I think it is, the one that played Draco Malfoy's mum.
Narcissa, yeah.
Yes, they're the major, I think, Harry Potter actors that have died after, like, Richard Harris anyway at the time. But yeah, so it was kind of like, oh, it's kind of the end of like an era of like those actors and stuff.
True.
Yeah, I mean, because that means the next time they make a Harry Potter, because they will make Harry Potter again, I'm sure.
They'll have to, yeah. Especially with the way the other franchise of it is going, not well.
Definitely, I think, not.
When they do the Harry Potter remake, I hope they do it better than what they're doing with, what is it called again?
Fantastic Beasts. Yes, I know. You see, it's very forgettable now because it hasn't made that impact that it, I think they wanted it to make. But yeah, I think, I don't know if you had any more sentiments on that, but the only other news was about Tom Felton releasing a book. I think he said, you know what? I should have actually found out what the book name is, because
you watched the video.
I know, but I wasn't paying attention to that. I was paying attention to him talking about Harry Potter.
Say the truth. I think you were paying attention to him talking about Hermione and talking about Emma.
I only say this. He only said it for a little. Like, he didn't actually say a lot. I think they have, okay, so the book is called Beyond the Wand, The Magic and Mayhem of Growing Up a Wizard. And it's very funny. It's got a good cover. I'll show you from like internally here. But it's got this really interesting cover where he's like got like a, it's not a wand, it's like a makeup brush, whatever, like making him up like a scene on a movie, whatever. But he looks very like, you know, oh, my life, blah, 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 in that cover.
Like, so he, behind the camera
kind of thing. Kind of exploring that. But for me, because I did end up listening to the interview, there's a YouTuber called Josh, well, he's an interviewer called Josh Horowitz, and he does this for like different celebrities. And I think the segment, his show is called Happy, Sad, Confused or something. So that's where he had Tom Felton on. Sometimes he has an audience. His Henry Cavill interview was with an audience somewhere. But with that one, what I liked about what Tom Felton was saying was like, in terms of how he's based this book as like the little anecdotes that surround his life during that time in Harry Potter, of which obviously a lot of the actors that have been a part of that, it was the biggest part of their life at the time anyway, because what, they were like adolescent ages to like adult 20s, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know Tom Felton would have been like 13 or something by the time he started Harry Potter, because he was relatively older. Because I remember Emma Watson saying he was 3 years older than her or something like that. Maybe that's why she had such a massive crush on him at the time. But either way, what he said about Emma, it wasn't anything to do with how they like each other. It was more so how they met. So for those that I won't ever go and listen to the interview, but he was just talking about how when he met her, he probably like embodied his Slytherin persona a lot because they just got all of them kids to be together. This was before they even knew each other in terms of she was now Hermione, he was now Draco. This was just like an open call, whatever that happened. And then they placed them all in this room or whatever. So apparently there happened to be a mic boom thing. You know how like they have the mic hanging over. So I'm guessing Emma maybe didn't know whatever. And she's like, what's that? And then like apparently Tom Felton was like, it's a mic, you idiot, or something. I don't know. So something along those lines was said, and he was like, that's probably what contributed to him becoming Draco. But he was like, yeah, so we didn't really meet on good terms. And then he found out she was like going to be Hermione and all that stuff. So that was really what he only shared. But it has always been interesting to me what they, I'm sure they must have had something going on, but they would never obviously say that because maybe to them it's like, they always say they're special to each other. So it's like, oh God. I always think, what about the spouses of each of them? What do they feel like?
What do you mean the spouses?
Like as in the spouses, the partners of each of them. Like, okay. I mean, how do they feel hearing that? Because, I mean, fans then obsessed about it, which is not right. But I think the book is interesting. I wouldn't be buying it or anything, but I think he says he shares a lot of, like, stories about, like, you know, his time in Harry Potter. And he was even sharing that, you know, he meets up with a lot of the cast still and stuff. So there's still that close relationship. And, yeah, I think I don't have much more, really. Just wanted to share that Tom Felton has a book. But anyway, now that we've said that, you don't have any more news?
No news from me.
Oh, good. We will now get into the breakdown of the book. Okay, now, Tinashe, can you give our listeners a refresher of the plot of Half-Blood Prince?
It goes like, suspicion and fear blow through the wizarding world as news of the Dark Lord's attack on the Ministry of Magic spreads. Harry has not told anyone about the future predicted by the prophecy in the Department of Mysteries, nor how deeply what happened to Sirius Black has affected him. He's desperate for Professor Dumbledore to arrive and take him away from the Deathlies, but Hogwarts may not be the safe haven from Voldemort's dark forces that it once was. In his sixth year, the name Black, Malfoy, Lestrange, and Snape will haunt Harry with shades of trust and treachery as he discovers the secret behind the mysterious Half-Blood Prince, and Dumbledore prepares him to face his own terrifying destiny.
Quite a
blur. Can I just say, when I read with shades of trust, with the shades part, I'm like, two things.
Yes, let us.
50 shades, and then what does the Pride and Prejudice, does the shades of Pemberley be thus polluted?
Oh,
yes. That's what I kept thinking of.
I love that. I love that for you because your memories, I mean, your memory is very strong for Pride and Prejudice, first of all, but also your mind is in the gutter there with some 50 shades references. But now on to Harry, though. What are your general thoughts on the book so far in terms of...
so far, because now I'm reading, I've just started chapter 13, so far, a lot of grief for me in terms of, I know where the story is going, I know what to expect and what will happen, so there's some things that are words and that are triggering that anticipatory grief that's will hit us when we get to the end of the book. So for me, when I'm reading about a certain character and, well, Dumbledore, I'm just enjoying him in this book so much. It feels like he's got, oddly enough, like a zest of life is just within him and he's just living his best life. Like, he's saying whatever he wants. Like, because I think we're now seeing him we're seeing more of him compared to what we've seen in the previous books. And I'm just, you know, I'm not as angry as him as I used to be.
That's true.
Probably go back to that anger in book 7. Mm-hmm. But for now, I'm just enjoying him as he is. There was some frustration for me with Harry again. He's not as dumb as he was being in book 5, but I have moments with him and I'm like, just use your brain, boy. He's like, you know, you're not dumb. You're very smart.
But
yeah.
Yeah, I think for me so far, I'm enjoying it, definitely. I'm a little bit ahead of you in terms of, I think I'm up to chapter 20 now.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely as the story is unfolding, I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It's just the way the story weaves. There's just something about the way it's written. You're like, I just love this story so much and I can't get enough of it. And I think, yeah, the Dumbledore element, I find myself more and more interested in reading between the lines of what he's saying. And I am enjoying Dumbledore, but I'm also very skeptical of him and his actions in terms of, like, you can now feel his puppet mastery going on because you can now see how he's manipulating Snape, how he's manipulating Harry and manipulating other characters to sort of work to this master plan of his. Especially when it comes to a moment when Harry needs to go on a mission to get something for Dumbledore, but we won't get to that until we get to the chapter. But I'm feeling a lot of that. So I guess we can start in chapter one. Break it down, break it down, break it down.
I'll just say that as an aside that this is my second read of these books. And I actually thought this book, that it would start in a little whinging, like in Privet Drive, but actually start like in the Muggle world, the Prime Minister. And I actually thought the book also started with Narcissa and Bellatrix going to Snape's house. Yeah. So
because of the film?
Is it because of the film?
Because of the film.
Okay.
As in, if I remember something that sticks in my mind, definitely the film start sticks in my mind. But when I then was reading this again, is this your second read?
No, as in of the books, second read of the books.
Oh, okay. Altogether. Or you all get together. To a certain point and maybe you don't read the whole
thing. No. As in, this is my second time reading
Half Blood Prince.
No, as in all of the books. What is happening?
No, I mean to say, like, so you read them the first time you read them.
Yes.
And then you never reread them again.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I think this is my fourth reread.
Damn. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, you're stronger. You're a bigger fan than I am, definitely.
I don't think it's so much a big fan thing. I think there was just a point when it was really the only fantasy I could do. I couldn't do any other fantasy outside of Harry Potter. And this is not like light fantasy, really, if you're thinking about it. But Half-Blood Prince, I definitely have not reread, but I've definitely consumed more stuff about it. Because I think at the time it was the obsession with Harry and Ginny, which has since way gone on to the other couple, which I will not mention their name. But it's interesting, yeah, that it's your second read. So and now I can see why you at the time you were sort of like, the movies were superseding like how you viewed some things and stuff.
Definitely. And there's a point I make later on, I think maybe chapter 11 or 12, but how I was viewing a certain couple. And in reading these books, how my view has changed about these characters as their own person and together and all that stuff. And I'm like, the movies really do
take that. Yeah, that's what I mean. They are a visual.
Yes, thing as yes, well. Yes. And being the last thing that I ever interacted with the Harry Potter universe. Yeah.
Makes sense.
My next point, I'm just going to read it out the way I wrote it. Because I read this chapter a while ago. So when the Prime Minister is recalling his first encounter with Fudge, he's like, how come his predecessor did not give him a heads up about the wizarding world, about wizarding Britain? And I quote, this is what it says. At this, Fudge had actually laughed. My dear Prime Minister, are you ever going to tell anybody? Still chortling, Fudge threw some powder into the fireplace, stepped into the emerald flames and vanished, blah, blah, blah. And essentially just left it at that, like, there's no way they protect the information that they're sharing with the Muggle world, with the Prime Minister of the Muggle world. And I'm like, what the hell? They don't make the Prime Minister sign a secrecy vow or something. Salem witch hunts anyone? Like, because that was a real horrific event that took place in colonial Massachusetts. Please help me.
That place. So I don't like saying that word either. Massachusetts.
Yes,
if I say
thank
slowly
you.
Enough.
Between 1692 and 1693, and I checked that if this also happened in England, and yes, it did from the 15th century to the end of the 18th century. So this event has been fed into more supernatural fantasy fictional stories that deal with witchcraft or magic. In the HPverse, the Fantastic Beasts movies, particularly in the first one, because that is the one, you know,
he goes to America, and then there's like
yes. So that's still happening over there.
It's into your point. I'm actually
fascinated. I haven't finished my point. And then in chapter 7 of book 4, Goblet of Fire, when the tree are walking around the tents and whatnot, they actually come across a group of witches from the Salem Witches Institute at the Quidditch World Cup. And all of this is to say, how is the Ministry of Magic protecting its people? This chapter kind of reminds me of a fanfic that I have read where Harry lives out his life per book 7, defeats Voldemort, marries Ginny, and have their kids. However, in the far future of that, the Muggles find them and conflict ensues. The Britain Wizarding World is essentially defeated and subjugated by the Muggles because they figure out if they take away their wands, then most of them cannot fight without them because most of them are not proficient in nonverbal magic or wandless magic. So Harry dies in that universe, and then he's reborn back into what he eventually sums up as an alternate reality. So he starts his life in the new world right from the moment his mother gives birth to him, mm-hmm. but he has all his memories as a child. And his aim during this story is to prevent the Muggles from taking over their world. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting, but you extrapolated like so much from that chapter. All I ever said was, I think it's because I read
that fanfic prior to reading this, and so I'm like, I'm thinking
in the forefront. I'm
thinking they just tell these people, and yes, maybe these people might, this prime minister might tell a couple of people, and they might think they're crazy. But there's always gonna be that one person who will see something weird and follow it, and then.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. And I literally put it down purely to the fact that I was going to say in Shona Yekuti, but purely to the fact that if you do tell anyone, who is going to believe you for something like this? Yeah. I think I don't know if it's a matter of them not having any secret contract or something, but surely there must be a jinx. You know how like Hermione in book 5
yes.
puts the jinx on who might tell. If someone gives away the secret of Dumbledore's army, they'll get the...
Yes, I remember that,
The pox or whatever on their face. I believe there could be something like that. I would like to think. It might not have been built into the world, but I would like to think that's a way to get around maybe that weird element that there is nothing. Plot hole-wise, there's nothing that JK indicates is like a way for... like an NDA for the Prime Minister people to say anything. But surely... I think there could be something that they put as a jinx on that prime minister to, if they say anything, then something happens to them. At least I think that would make more sense. Like you're saying that if it doesn't, it opens up a lot of doors for people to exploit it, utilize it. Because for me, although it's interesting when you said you thought the story goes with the Narcissa going, you know, appearing first or whatever. I always did find this funny, this chapter very interesting because when I was first reading the books, I think I mentioned this in another episode recording where I was like, it struck me as interesting that it starts literally in the Muggle world, except not in Harry's Muggle world. It's literally just a Muggle prime minister. So at the time, I remember sort of being interested by the title and the fact that it starts on a very different note. So, yeah, like for me, that chapter kind of like always sticks in my mind because I'm like, it's one of the few that like literally has nothing to do with Harry, but it's just about the wizarding world. Well,
yeah.
Because
we're kind of being introduced to the impact of Voldemort being back. What does that mean for the rest of the world? Not just for the wizarding world. It's now spilling into the Muggle world as well. Do you have another points? I had some more points for the same chapter.
Yeah, no, definitely I do. Yeah. I just hadn't gotten deeper into them. I think if anything,
how do you feel about Fudge? I do not feel sorry for Fudge at all. Maybe just a smidgen of pity, but for a whole year, Harry and Dumbledore have been telling him that Lord Voldemort is back. Maybe don't believe the kid, but Dumbledore, a trusted advisor, head of the Wizengamot, like now demoted, unless he was. Oh, yeah, at the time, I didn't realize if it was also reinstated because I think he was reinstated at that point. But also the headmaster of Hogwarts. You're not going to believe that man? Who's telling you Voldemort is back? And even if it turned out to be false, right, he could have easily blamed it all on Dumbledore and Harry and protected his clout. On top of that, say he didn't believe them, but they need to protect the Wizarding World from any other potential Dark Lord uprising or even the Death Eaters regrouping, especially after the events of Book 4 and 5. And he has the nerve to say, we've got Dementors swarming all over the place, attacking people left and right and center. They've deserted the prison and joined He Who Must Not Be Named. I won't pretend that wasn't a blow. Like, I really got heated. Like, and then he dares to be bitter at Dumbledore for not trying to persuade Harry to do what exactly. Like, who, like, just the audacity of this man, honestly. Yes. Yeah. They warned him.
I was going to say, so with that chapter, what did I say? Fudge makes it look as if, like, he tries to downplay, like, Voldemort's return in a way, like, to the Prime Minister. Okay, he's trying to not look incompetent.
Yes.
So I think the Prime Minister starts questioning, like, so all this stuff has happened. What have you been doing? But clearly, because Fudge has not been doing anything, but he is also in a ministerial position, you can tell he doesn't want to give it away that he technically
he's not going to show his incompetence. Very, like,
much so.
Yeah,
very much so. I don't know. I didn't have many more points.
Did you remember that Kingsley was the Prime Minister's secretary?
No, I didn't.
And that took me by surprise.
Like, oh, okay. That's a very interesting thing. But I did say, I think there's a fear that the Prime Minister, he says something along the lines of, I can't find the line, but I think it's more so the fact that he knows that the wizards would be able to do anything.
He mentions
that.
Yes, yes.
And I just think, like, it's a sad reality that, like, you know, if it was to be muggles versus wizards, the wizards would be able to win in a nutshell. Whatever that saying is. But
do you want me to read? I actually take it too.
Okay,
like,
good.
Because I also said, like, when the PM was like, you guys can do magic, you're wizards, can't you sort anything out? So it goes, but for heaven's sake, you are wizards, you can do magic, surely you can sort out, well, anything. Scrimmagor, or however you say his name, Scrimmagor turned slowly on the spot and exchanged an incredulous look with Fudge, who really did manage a smile this time, and he said kindly, the trouble is, the other side can do magic too, Prime Minister.
Exactly. Like, there is no winning when you are fighting forces that have the same capabilities as you, and maybe even more, because dark wizards essentially push the boundaries of magic anyway.
Yeah.
They are not bound by that limitation. I always find it funny. There's a fanfic I did read where it was discussing that. I think I mentioned it last time. That, like, what if it is the case that, you know, these, the way the English or British wizarding community teaches magic is in a way ineffective. I think that's the argument that Grindelwald was trying to make when he was fighting, like, Dumbledore back in the day, to say, like, we shouldn't be hidden away from the world. And that's what Voldemort was also trying to fight. Like, that whole idea of, like, we shouldn't be secret, we shouldn't be kept away because there's so much to explore in magic, whatever. But then they always take it too far by then, you know, doing the dark arts or wanting to persecute the Muggleborns or some stupid reason.
Yeah.
But also, the appearance of Scrimgeour in that chapter was very interesting because he's, I think, obviously trying to, we then, I think, start seeing, I didn't note exactly where he said this, but I think we then start seeing how he wants Dumbledore to be involved or something. I think he mentioned something about Harry, or at least that.
In this chapter?
Is it in this chapter?
Probably not.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe my point was written at a different point. Or maybe I'm talking about Fudge, sorry. Wanting to sort of say, oh, I was trying to get help or something. But he's trying to obviously not be accountable. I don't know. I wrote that point.
Oh, he completely, Fudge, like, placed the blame on other people.
Yeah. So he's just a useless person. So anyway, I guess moving on to chapter 2 then, which is when Narcissa and Bellatrix appear. What are your thoughts about the, what are they called? Black sisters?
Black sisters. I made a point about Narcissa's love for Draco and the fear for Draco's safety, like, pushed her to go against the Dark Lord. And that's a theme that's carried into book 7, the length she would go to for her child.
Yes.
I also enjoyed the interaction between the sisters. I think in the movies, you kind of forget that some of these people are related. The Blacks in particular, Sirius Black, Regulus Black. And I don't think we even get much of Regulus Black in the movie. These people are more prominent in fan fiction than they are in the movie and obviously canon. Yeah.
And the thing is, you can't blame it from a canon perspective because obviously JK wasn't going for wanting to write every single minor detail. If she wanted to, she would have written extended versions of extended versions of extended versions of her book, which a lot of authors don't do. Movies do that, but authors tend to just give you the one thing and then you're done. But I'm sure she has like notes and all the extra little things that she probably has about these characters, which allows her, for example, to build that Wizarding World website, the Pottermore website, for example, because, you know, you have the extra notes.
Mm.
But like you said, what I find interesting, for example, was the fact that I don't know why the film made her have half white, half black hair, Bella, like Bella, not Bella,
Narcissa,
because it's just silly. She, thing is, canon-wise, if I'm not mistaken, or at least maybe this, I'm feeding this from fan fiction, it was always that the three black sisters, Narcissa was the one that had the blonde hair. That's why Draco ended up having the super blonde hair too, because his parents, whatever, but the other sisters had dark hair. But
yes,
somehow they made her half. I get it, it's a visually striking thing, but we'll discuss it, I suppose, when we get to the film. But you're right, like, I think we don't get enough of the black family, we don't have the benefit of sometimes appreciating like the lengths that Narcissa went to try to save her son, or, you know, the fact that Bellatrix was also wanting to help her sister go against the Dark Lord as well. Yeah, it's just interesting that we don't get enough of that.
And the fact that Bella cares that much for her sister as well, because you'd think she would be all about just, and she is all about the Dark Lord, right? But a part of her also wants to protect her family too, which is kind of surprising for Bella. She is a proud black, I suppose, but she's very much, her mind has now been so warped into just thinking, what does the Dark Lord want? Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And what about in terms of Snape in this chapter? Did you have anything that struck you?
I just said Snape is hell of a spy. Like, I checked some parts. Let me read them. But before that, I'm just happy about Wormtail's life right now. Wormtail betrayed his friends for what he thought would be glory, but instead it turned out to be a life of servitude. Like,
to Snape.
I love that for him. Like, you know, and Snape being intentionally funny when he does the spell that's probably painful to Wormtail to catch him out when he's eavesdropping. And he's like, he has lately taken to listening at those. I don't know what he means by that.
But also, in terms of Snape being funny, I did find it funny when Bellatrix was trying to, you know, challenge him about like, oh, you're probably double crossing the Dark Lord, and he was like, well, my orders, because she was like, why weren't you there when we went to the why weren't you there when we went to the Hall of Mysteries or Department of Mysteries, yes, or whatever? And then Snape's like, my orders were to remain behind, said Snape. Perhaps you disagree with the Dark Lord. Perhaps you think that Dumbledore would not have noticed if I had joined forces with the Death Eaters to fight the Order of the Phoenix. And forgive me, you speak of dangers. You were facing six teenagers, yes, were you not? And I'm just like, yes. When you do put it like that, the Death Eaters were very much...
He's just so snarky, like, you know.
Very
you read the parts
so
that I wanted to read.
Thank you.
I don't know, you condensed them because I had whole parts and I don't know how I was going to read it. I was about to just read the whole book, do another audiobook here, but I love when he's mocking Bella, as you said, over the said dangers that they faced at the ministry.
I don't know if you had any more thoughts on the Spinner's End.
Snape mentions how Dumbledore sustained a serious injury because his reactions are slower. Of course, he is sharing this information with Bella. He attributes it to Dumbledore's battle with Lord Voldemort in the ministry last year that left him shook, but in reality this is Dumbledore having dealt with the second Horcrux and the Gaunt Ring, and I don't know why I made that point. It was just a regular point.
I suppose you're just trying
go anywhere with it.
It's okay, I forgive you. I guess we can move on to Will and Won't, which is chapter 3. Unless you absolutely needed to articulate that point.
Oh, yeah. I made at one point, like, in the last episode, We were talking about how Snape is Draco's godfather. And I remember confidently saying so, and that it was not just a fanfic thing. So as I'm reading the last part of chapter 2, Spinner's End, when Narcissa is beseeching Snape to help her son, and throughout the making of the and bonding of the unbreakable vow, neither Narcissa nor Snape mentioned that relationship at all.
So I feel like it
must be a fanfic thing.
Yeah, I felt like I knew him as thing as godfather as well. But you know what?
And I googled it and it says we as the fans did that.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I guess it's a fanfic thing. But it's a fanfic thing that has stuck for the most part.
Yes.
It's a fanfic thing that has stuck.
I think all fanfic that I've read, if we're involving the Malfoys or Draco or anything, they mentioned that Snape is Draco's godfather.
Yeah, I think moving on really to chapter 3, I don't know why, I didn't really have a lot of points to make about this. Oh, sorry, listeners, I'll get to be a bit more fresh once I get into my computerized notes. These were my handwritten notes, which is
really annoying. How do you have much to say about chapter 3? Like, this chapter is hilarious. This is when Dumbledore goes and
picks. Yeah, I mean, I have much to say in terms of from after the point when Harry's describing when he gets all the letters and stuff. Because if you remember, the first part of the chapter starts with him reading out all the different things they're getting from the ministry, like the safety cards, you know, like there's one that's called Ministry Guarantees Student Safety. Yes. That's a headline from the Daily Prophet. And then there's a little safety card where it says protecting your home and family against dark forces. So I think I kind of skipped mentioning a lot of that in terms of point by point because I was like, it just shows the ministry. Because
you end up making points about everybody. The only thing I pointed out that is I like the writing device that JK used there. Because instead of just Harry's room is so messy, but I get it, I understand it. My room can be messy, but the way she used that is to tell us and update us about what's happening in the wizarding world. Like you're able to peer at various newspaper articles in his room that summarize for us the events that have been happening in the wizarding world. The leaflet issued about the on behalf of the Minister of Magic and all that stuff. And like I like that kind of writing device. Like she's not just telling us the news,
it's not expository. But I think then, okay, so I suppose because that's the chapter when Dumbledore comes, I think what I mostly pointed out was, like, you know how he's expressing like a bit of anxiety or insecurity about like someone coming, but like you're not sure if they're coming, because obviously he's not a kid who gets what he wants all the time.
Yes.
So I was just sort of relating to that, to be like, I'm someone who, if I want something to work out so much, but then I might be like, it might not work out. Maybe Dumbledore doesn't turn up or something. But his anxiety at that is just like so relatable.
I'm like, at the bare minimum, and the bar is really low here, Harry deserves a hug.
Very true. Very true.
Like he refused to believe that the mere idea that he could be, and I quote, it just seemed too good to be true, that he was going to be rescued from the Dursleys after a mere fortnight in their company. And the fact that he used the word rescued, how sad is that? No.
But also Dumbledore, you're right, like turning it up a little bit. I think I said something about like the fact that he takes this authoritative role when it comes to the Dursleys, like when they're not wanting to listen to him or whatever. But then he just kind of like silences them or whatever. I suppose when people are trying to say Michael Gambon hemmed up the Dumbledore, it's because if you're thinking about how book 6 doesn't include any of this, it doesn't include him coming to visit the Dursley family, that's when we could have seen more of Dumbledore stepping up. But the films don't do that justice. So people kind of have this image of Dumbledore being this, like, nice guy.
Do we...
In the does movie, actually, there's no chapter reading, will reading scene.
Oh, okay.
Book 6 literally goes Spinner's End, and then they're off to the Weasley's place, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he doesn't... But there's no... Dursleys are not featured in book.
We don't see Slughorn either?
We do. Well, so actually what I should say is he starts off at the cafe for some random reason. He doesn't start off at home. He starts off in the city somewhere.
Okay.
And then Dumbledore comes to pick him up in the city, and then they go to Slughorn's house.
Okay.
But we don't get the Dursleys in that.
It's very weird, the choices that they make. Well, of course, we'll explore it more when we're watching the film. But it's very weird the choices that they made for book 6 adaptation.
That's true. That's true. Because I was trying to think,
Can I just say, Dumbledore did not give an F about the Dursleys' feelings.
That's exactly what I had the point here on, I think.
Oh, I think there's a part that I checked on page 48 to 49. He's like, judging by your look of stunned belief, Harry did not warn you that I was coming, Dumbledore said pleasantly. However, let's assume that you have invited me warmly into your house. And then there's a part he says, I don't mean to be rude, he began in a tone that threatened rudeness in every syllable. Yet sadly, accidental rudeness occurs alarmingly often. Dumbledore finished his sentence gravely. Best you say nothing at all, my dear man. Dumbledore waited a moment or two, apparently to see whether any of the Dursleys were going to say anything. But as the silence stretched on, he smiled. Shall we assume that you invited me into your sitting room?
He was very witty,
very cheeky. That's what I'm saying, like what you're saying about how you can see the puppetry of Dumbledore. At the moment, I'm just enjoying him as he is.
That is true. I mean, in the sense that I can feel his presence in this book, definitely. Like, he's more present. Like, you know who Dumbledore is from this book now, in terms of like his power, how his power is more through not being obvious, but just. When he walks into a room, he commands the room, and that's why people wanted him to be the Minister of Magic for years and years and years, but he said no.
Yes.
But you can now see why people gravitate towards him, because with the Dursleys, who are very difficult people to deal with for any average person, he's just able to, like, put them in their place and, like, you know, whatever. But for me, it was, like, the mentions of, for example, Sirius and all those things that kind of, like, bring back all this emotion from book five.
Yes.
And I'm just like, damn it, Harry. Lost another parent. What is it about you?
Hey, are we blaming the victim? But speaking of Sirius, like, willing his possessions to Harry, who now reluctantly has ownership of Creature 2. Well, I distinctly remember a scene when, like, I think, I don't know if it's in the book or film or whatever, when Harry is strangling Creature, and I assumed it happened the very next time Harry saw him again. Was that in the movie or in the next book or something? When Harry is strangling Creature. When did that happen?
I think...
Is that a book thing or film thing? Or?
Oh my God, now that you said that, I don't remember. But I think in book 7, he does do some strangling in the sense that... Oh, I love... I could just see your reaction to me even saying that sentence. But I think he does, but I do not remember when.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a... In the movie, definitely not, because Creature doesn't even feature, even though he's a crucial... Oh! Not a crucial part, but he doesn't even feature at all.
Oh, okay.
But in a, you see, that's what I said. There's no will reading in the movie. The movie completely does away with any of the serious black remnants or whatever. There's nothing like that. But in book 7, I think he might strangle him a little bit, but I can't
remember.
The
way you keep on saying that, like, it's like a...
I think so. Because I think he realized, I think it happens in such a way that it leads to, yeah. You know what? We'll talk about it when we get to it. I don't want to annoy people by just saying, I think. But Buckbeak does go get away. He goes back to Hogwarts. Because Sirius gave back Buckbeak to Harry.
Yes.
But Harry was like, he can go back to Hogwarts. But I did say, what's funny is that Dumbledore acknowledges that he knew Harry was being ill-treated.
That's my next point. Because what you're saying about the puppetry, right? I know I just said a few minutes ago that at the moment I'm just enjoying Dumbledore, but... This part made me angry because I'm like, Dumbledore knew and had the nerve to admit that he was aware that the Dursleys, aware of the Dursleys' treatment of Harry. And it says, like, you do not, in the book, you do not do as I asked. You have never treated Harry as a son. He has known nothing but neglect and often cruelty at your hands. The best that can be said is that he has at least escaped the appalling damage you have inflicted upon the unfortunate boy sitting between you. So, I don't care for his anger now. Where the hell was he this whole time? Like, hell to the no. Like, you know, I know the reasons which he does proceed to tell the Dursleys, but I can still feel, but I do still feel some type of way about where was he?
Yep, exactly.
It could have just been a matter of, he didn't have to come by himself, but he could have made the situation where he would live a normal life. I'm not asking him to treat him like a prince or anything, like, you know, but this was abuse. Outright abuse. And he points out that it was abuse.
That's where I said the puppetry of Dumbledore. Mm. I'm now seeing it a little bit. The puppet mastery, I should say, of Dumbledore. Because if you have the guts to admit that you knew someone was being abused, but also when he makes the request of Petunia in terms of, like, Harry staying back with them for one more year, it's all just part of the plan. Like, because I'm noted, because he says to them, for example, I'll go to the actual part. He's like, the magic I evoked 15 years ago means that Harry has powerful protection while he still can call this house home. However miserable he has been here, however unwelcome, however badly treated, you have at least grudgingly allowed him his house room. The magic will cease to operate the moment that Harry turns 17. In other words, the moment he becomes a man. I ask only this, that you allow Harry to come back, to return once more to this house before his 17th birthday, which will ensure that the protection continues until that time. And if we obviously know how Dumbledore is thinking, it's that he wants him to still be away from Voldemort's clutches, yes, for when he's ready to kill all the Horcruxes and all that stuff. So it's not so much for Harry's protection that he wants him to go back to a place where he knows he's miserable, but it's so that the plan can work out. For me.
Anyway. But is he not protecting Harry in a way?
He is protecting Harry, but like someone put it, Harry is almost like a pawn in Dumbledore's game. That's,
absolutely.
I have to say this, as much as I love Dumbledore, once I get to book 7, my love for him kind of wanes a little bit in terms of, like, I love him as a character that is so complex and great and enigma type thing. Yes. But then I always think about how the people around him, for him, because of what we learn about Dumbledore, and we obviously discussed that in book 7, because of what we learn about what he was like as a young person, I don't think he ever let go of that desire to sort of like be the best or to up everyone, to one up everyone, to be the most intelligent person in the room, that sometimes I think he forgets that there are people and lives in this. And I think you see that, especially when you read on.
He does say that at some point in time, like, you know, he does think he's the smartest person in the room, but there is a danger to that, that the mistakes he makes are also
pretty great.
Yeah.
Because I think for me, that was the point I wanted to make about that, to be like, be his complexity. If there's one character that JK did very well to build in such a way where, even though by the time you get to book 7, you only are now getting the full breadth and width and length, whatever, of what Dumbledore is like, He's still very much a character that people make think pieces about, like, you know, is he like death or whatever, you know, in terms of his representation, and how far into the plane did he know, and all this stuff, because he's just so complex, I think, for the most part. So
true that.
Yeah, this the way he is able to manipulate the Dursleys and then sort of keep Harry on side, and into the next chapter if we're moving on.
Chapter 4.
Yeah. And what's the title of that one? Horace Slughorn. We meet the professor.
I was just laughing at Harry stating Hermione's whole government name when they are talking about the wizarding household having anti-operating was like Hogwarts, and Harry's like, Hermione Granger told me, like Dumbledore doesn't know every little thing about his life and who Hermione Granger is. And it also kind of made me think that Harry is still not aware of how much Dumbledore knows about his life. Even after all that was said about his treatment from the Dursleys. And did Slughorn recognize the gaunt ring for what it was? Not a Horcrux, but a Soulstone or one of the Deathly Hallows? Because it says Slughorn's eyes lingered for a moment on the ring too, and Harry saw a tiny frown momentarily crease his white forehead. Or was Riddle wearing that ring
I think so. Now that you say that, I think that's a hint from JK to be like, what we're probably going to be seeing, as in foreshadowing. I didn't even get that, but that's really good pickup. I didn't even think about that, but it makes sense because he had already killed Morfin by then.
Okay,
like his uncle.
Yes.
And then he came back to school and asked about.
Every time I read Morfin, I was like, Mighty Morfin Power Rangers.
Oh my God.
Ooh, there was a comment made about Umbridge's fate with the Essentials. Because remember I said this in the last...
Yes.
So I think I felt vindicated or something. Not vindicated, but...
Validated,
no, but yes.
Vindicated, I think, is a good word.
I might have been in hiding, but some funny... Or it says in the book, I might have been hiding, but some funny rumors have reached me since Dolores Umbridge left. If that's how you treat teachers these days... Professor Umbridge ran a foe of a central head, said Dumbledore. I think you, Horace, would have known better than to stride into the forest and call a horde of angry Sanchez filthy half-breeds. And I'm like, something dark happened there.
That is true.
Yes.
That is true. I think with this chapter, I was interested to see how, you know, how Harry was pretty much the villain for the most part in book five, but now he's like the hero or something, the chosen one.
Yes.
Because that's what Dumbledore uses to appeal for Slughorn to, you know, feel that need that to come to Hogwarts, because he can see that he has potential to have the chosen one as part of his, you know, class of people that he's chosen. I mean, he's taught because he's a collector of like special treasure type things, like Horus, I mean. So
yes.
Dumbledore obviously is now using that shift in people's mentality about Harry to like his advantage, because I feel like if this had been in book five, Horace might have been like, nope, I don't want to deal with that,
because, which is how he's treating Draco at the moment.
Yes. But because Harry's now the chosen one, I love that scene in the movie when Hermione's like, they think you're the chosen one. He's like, well, I am. It's funny. They should lean more into that sarcastic Harry in the movies, but anyway, it's fine. And I did also say you can see like Dumbledore's influence in general through this, like we keep saying, it's building up, it's showing how much Dumbledore influences and manipulates and really controls people sometimes around him, to the point where he might feel a bit powerful from that, because he's able to manipulate Horace without, or like, Horace realizes the manipulation, but it still works out somehow.
Yes, yeah, yes, because it's what he wants. Yes. It'll be what he wants anyway. Yeah. I also mentioned something about Harry still grieving Sirius. That's still like something that's very heavy within his heart and mind, which is what, you know, we read from the previous chapter and also in this chapter. But I was also like, you know, focusing on the fact that Dumbledore not giving Harry a heads up about Snape's new position. He also probably can guess Harry is thinking the private lessons might be about learning advanced spells and such. And I can picture Dumbledore internally shrugging and being like, he's going to find out this season what's going to happen. I am sharing spoilers. And him encouraging Harry to tell Ron and Hermione about the prophecy, it's him wanting him not to shut out his support system, because he knows he's gonna need it. And it's that, I hate you. Like, I wasn't really thinking about the puppetry of it all, other than that part that made me angry. Yes, about him. Yes. Finding out, because I know actually, when we've been reading these books, book 1, 2, 3, we can see what Dumbledore is doing, how much he's not telling Harry. Yes. How much, especially like, which book was he avoiding Harry?
Book 5.
Yeah, and how that was impacting on Harry, like that puppeting, that manipulating and using Harry. And you can see why he's saying all these things, because he knows that in the end, that love he has, that love power he has,
yes,
is going to be important. So he, yes, can't shut out his friends. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sorry that I'm putting that in your... I put that in your mind.
I'm trying to enjoy the last book with Dumbledore and you're just trying to piss all over it.
But why are you spoiling for those that are not yet up to date to say Dumbledore is going to go anywhere? Where is he going to go?
I'm assuming the people who are listening to this have read the books.
Very much so.
And this is just us, just, you know.
But really, in that chapter, I didn't have much more to mention, except obviously then they go to... what is it called? What's the Weasley's house again? I just literally forgot.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
You are a staunch supporter of the Weasleys. You're all about the Weasleys.
Come on, just tell me.
The Barrow.
Oh, thank you. I thought you were going to say little whinging. I was baiting you.
Please.
Oh, my God.
Also, yeah, we start with Tonks. I start with Tonks, with their mousy brown hair, Harry noting that she looks drawn and even ill. And so I didn't realize how early in the book the tension and fights between Remus and Tonks are already happening. Yeah. So when do you think they actually started dating?
I think it was probably sometime in book five, maybe. Yeah. Whether it's before or after Sirius, I can't say. As in before or after Sirius's death, I can't say.
Yeah.
Because either they connected. There's an interesting fanfic I read where, like, Harry walks in on Tonks transforming into Sirius in front of, like Remus Lupin is, like, asking her to. But she transforms into Sirius. I know, it's very weird, but she was doing it for therapy to be, like, him seeing his best friend. Like,
oh, one more wow. Time, okay. I went into the gutter.
I know. That's why I saw your face. I was like, yeah, I know. It's interesting, but I didn't think about it that way.
I apologize. I need therapy.
But no.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, you can read into whichever way, but it was more from a therapy perspective. Okay. And Harry's kind of like traumatized, like, Sirius, what are you doing here? Kind of thing. And
poor thing.
Like, Remy's like, I'm so sorry. I just kind of like needed that, whatever, like, goodbye or whatever. Because obviously, Sirius's death, I think of all the deaths, is probably one of the saddest deaths.
Yes.
Because it's just so sudden.
Yes. And
there's no body. There's.
Yes. You can't even bury him.
He's just gone.
He's just gone.
So, yeah, anyway, but I was just going to say, I remember the title of the chapter is The Excess of Phlegm. But at the time when I first read this book, I didn't know how to spell phlegm. So I was always trying to figure out how to say that word. Yeah, that was an interesting point about the chapter title there. But then also, like you said, we start with Tonks and she's obviously, everyone around is very vigilant. I was just thinking of the constant vigilance of Mad-Eye Moody. Like,
everybody. Wait, was it you? Who was saying vigilant? Was it you? Was I watching something else?
No.
I don't know. I was watching.
Thank God.
It's something else.
The way you wanted to laugh at me. Gosh.
I was prepared. I'm sorry. I just remembered who was saying it.
Lord, it wasn't me, because you were going to laugh at me. But yes, Chonks' like, relationship with Remus in terms of the reveal and whatever's going to come up. Yeah, I don't know when they would have started having a relationship, but it's interesting how it's fed in, because as the reader, do you think when you first read it, could you tell what was going on in terms of her being in a relationship with Lupin?
Not at all.
Yeah, I don't think I did too. At all.
And the only reason I pick it up now, all this stuff, right, is...
Because you know.
Yeah.
At the time,
but it's what you said as well about how JK was setting up Billy. Bill, yes. And Flo, like, you know,
it was a very subtle,
and you could have missed it if you didn't know, like, you know, you shouldn't read the books before.
Very much,
it would have been like a throwaway thing that you wouldn't even pay attention to.
And that's
to.
The thing she even mentioned. I forgot to say in the last chapter, there's a mention of the Inferi, like the people, the dead.
Yes,
people.
Yes,
they're gonna be a very important part towards the end of the book, but it's a throwaway line initially, and then you realize it. But also, obviously, Mr. Weasley's promoted, you know, Miss Weasley's very excited about that. And then you can feel the doom and gloom through the clock as well. Apparently the clock is always in peril.
Yes.
Everyone is in peril.
Yes.
But I do love when they, Mr. Weasley and Miss Weasley, do their verification of identity.
Molly Wobbles. Now we know how they have seven kids.
Literally. Harry must have been mortified to witness that, because, you know, what the hell? And what did Mr. Weasley want to figure out about muggles? What was he trying to... Oh, that's his... when he says to Molly, what do I want to figure out or whatever? And then she's like, you want to figure out like something about a plane or some weird muggle thing? Like his verification of identity is like...
Yes.
Him figuring out something that is a very muggle thing,
yes.
Obviously. Like, one thing I love is how JK shows that the Weasleys genuinely are just accepting people. Like, unlike the other unlike the other pure blood families, maybe their status as blood traitors is what kind of pushes them to even be more accepting of like the odd and ends of the world, including muggles and even muggle bonds and stuff like that. Or at least through their dad, maybe they're very accepting. So yeah,
true that. Yeah, true
and that. Yeah, I don't know. I mentioned that Hermione worrying about Harry, like after Sirius's death, she's kind of like asking him, "Are you okay?" and stuff like that. That always shows like her being attuned to her friends more than the friends are attuned to her sometimes, I think. She's always more caring than them. But then Ginny for me. I'm so sorry. Because obviously I'm talking about when Harry has gone to bed after he arrives at the Weasley's house. And Ginny just kind of comes into the room and she's complaining about Fleur, whatever yes. her name is. But she's calling her Phlegm, literally.
They're so mean. And it's because they're all jealous about Fleur, of her. Yeah.
But it's just funny, like, the way you now start seeing for me how much the movies lacked having Ginny be this person who's like very out there and she's not afraid to speak her mind. And that's one thing I just love about that portrayal of that. And like you said, her humor isn't your lighthearted, haha. It's actually mean. Like,
yes. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, we do get to the scene when her and Ron kind of go at it, but this is a build up to that.
But you speaking about that, her walking into that room and whatnot, all this interaction that's happening between her, the trio, but also her and Harry, the fact that it's missing, it really takes away from them coming together as a couple, because you're like, it kind of happens out of nowhere. And I do mention it later on when we get to, like, I think chapter 12 or something like that. But here she says, and was that jealousy? Or Ginny was just mocking Harry when she says, I suppose you like the way Phlegm says Harry, do you? Ginny said scornfully. So I don't know if she was saying it the jealous way or just mocking Harry.
Yeah, but yep, just that's that true.
Just mini interaction between them, right? It fits a lot into, like, you know, the growing conversations that exactly. they have with exactly. each other.
That's because it builds on from book 5 where she's challenging him and sort of being like, don't scream at me, Harry, or whatever, and all this stuff. And now they've got that rapport, when, you know.
Yes.
God,
yes.
This language of English. Anyway, they've got that back and forth now where she's comfortable enough to be in his space without thinking, what does my hair look like? I'm sure she would have just come in her pyjamas because she no longer sees Harry as that thing. I'm sure Harry is still very attractive to her.
I still think that she likes Harry.
Yep.
But she's moved on.
Exactly.
So it allows her to be comfortable.
Very much. She's no longer caught up in the feelings. Yes. She's no longer caught up in his status. Is the boy he was chosen or whatever. But like you said, that comment of her making fun of what Harry might think or feel, it's very much a friendship type thing that you will do to your friend. And I think it's good that they've moved on to that. And I was laughing at how, I think I said something between that. Something about Ron. I think he says something about looks, girls' looks, something like how Fleur looks or whatever. And sort of like it just shows how much at that age, obviously, a boy only ever values the looks, because Hermione, I think, gets annoyed at the comment he says. But obviously, he's stupid and doesn't realize it. And finally enough, Hermione and her book love, or her love for freaking out about results and exam results and stuff.
She's such a perfectionist, isn't she?
I literally was like, I could not be friends with Hermione. Never. Like, no way. Because when Harry reacts to it, he's dreading and then having this relief that, you know, he didn't do as bad as he expected to do. But
I'm actually surprised Harry got an exceeds expectation on his question exam.
Exactly.
Like, that would be the equivalent of like a distinction grade. Yeah.
No, I think that's a credit.
No, it's a distinction because after exceeds expectation is outstanding.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
So that'll be distinction.
Wow.
Outstanding would be a high distinction.
I suppose so.
You got an excess expectation in portions.
Exactly.
Please.
But then, of course, Hermione is disappointed with her excess expectation for, I think, Defense Against the Dark Arts or something.
It must be, yeah.
So that's always the one subject that she can never do well at. And then, really, we kind of just see the trio hanging out, I think, the next chapter.
I make a note to say it's very clear that Harry does not want to be an aura for himself, but more so for survival. And here on page 102, he says, it had seemed the right destiny for him since he had heard the prophecy. Wouldn't he be living up to the prophecy and giving himself the best chance of survival if he joined those highly trained wizards whose jobs it was to find and kill Voldemort? And surviving the prophecy and the fight English. What the hell, man? So surviving the prophecy and the fight to the death battle headed his way. Hence why I maintain that, like, him ending up as an aura.
It doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense to me.
For me, except...
He was basically one all his childhood, yes, school years.
Yes. I always say this. In a fan fiction where Harry is not the primary person, I don't mind him being an aura. Like I would say, like my Dramini reads and stuff, he's an aura sometimes because it makes it easier for him to interact with Draco, for example, whatever. That makes sense. But in terms of Harry's own like story as it is, he could have been an aura for the first couple of years, but then he would have probably realized this is not for me. And as I've always said, it makes more sense for him to be a professor because they literally set it up in book 5 with him leading Dumbledore's army. Yes. It's perfect.
Honestly, if it was any other story, right, this would have been like the perfect setup. Yes.
Literally. And also, he admires Snape and Dumbledore so much that he named his kids after them. And they're both professors.
Sorry. I didn't want to interrupt, but when you said he admires Snape and Dumbledore, because I'm still stuck in books. I'm like, he admires Snape?
That is true.
What are you talking about?
I know. But by the end of the books,
yes,
we know that he admires Snape enough to name his kids after him. Mm. So seeing how those people influenced children, I mean, Snape is a very problematic professor type person, but it just makes sense for me that he would have gone down that path of like being not in whatever else, but not an aura. Like I think the aura pathway was for the first maybe couple of years when they're still trying to catch all the excess Death Eaters out there. But then after that, he probably would realize, I'm sick and tired of doing this. I've always been targeted. Maybe something happens to him and Ginny or his family or something. And he's like, why am I still doing this? And then he steps away or something. Cause, yeah, you're right. Anyway, I don't want to keep going about that.
Hey, point, I'm playing this, the Hogwarts Mystery game, right?
Yes.
And my MC, my character, right, is also involved in all this breaking, curse breaking and stuff like that, aura type stuff. So she's now in seventh year and they're now deciding on careers, like whatnot. So we said no to being a Medi Witch. They're trying to convince me to become an aura. I'm like, no, thank you.
So what will you be?
I don't know, man. They're going to have to offer me another job.
Because, I mean, there's not many roles outside of like a ministry department role.
I'd rather work with Bill as a curse breaker.
That's true. That's an interesting role. But yeah, then I don't know why I made this point about emphasizing that you can't live the Death Eaters.
In terms of book 5?
I don't know. I just mentioned it.
Chapter 5.
Oh, because of Regulus. There's a mention about Regulus in there, and I think they mentioned that he died or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think I was just trying to say you can't leave the death, like as in it's cultish enough that you can't then put it behind you.
Yes,
and I think Mark even is made to be like that. I always love, not to mention Dramini again, but I always love when they reference how like Draco, for example, can't get rid of the mark.
She's like, not to mention Dramini. I didn't want to mention Dramini. I didn't want to talk about them. Who likes them? I don't even like them. Please. She couldn't wait to mention Dramini like since we started. She has to feed it into every little conversation.
I haven't read any fanfiction.
You go on, girl. You're Dramini. You know.
But I'm just saying, like, the mark is a big deal for them. Like, they talk about how it's just, how it's impossible to remove. It either just fades away or you spend years trying to figure out how to get the spell out or whatever. So it's really bad. But anyway, you can't leave the Death Eater cult role, blah, 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 that you are. And then they go to that place. Diagon. We need to wrap this up because I can't do this anymore. I can't. Oh my gosh.
They go to that place. What's wrong with you?
Diagon Alley. They go to that place. Ollivander has disappeared, you know. At first you don't sort of see the significance of it, but, you know, obviously we know what Voldemort is after.
Mm.
You know, the Wizarding World, there's just a little bit of panic buying going on, a little bit of COVID pandemic tissue buying.
Wow, you connected that. Yeah, true.
Just saying, because I wrote panic buying, then I just thought of the pandemic because people are doing money rushes, all this stuff, which is really crazy. And then also, funny enough, in all of this, I noticed that Harry sometimes seems to mention Ginny a lot more in this chapter.
Does he?
Like, as in, there's just always drops and hints of him saying Ginny was there, but not like in a excessive way.
You say that, right? I hope you remember that when we're talking about, I think, chapter 12 or something. Because I make a note of how sometimes it feels like all this is happening out of the blue. But please remember that when we talk about chapter 12.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And then I think, obviously, Harry's got a guard of honor, like the president of the United States or something.
Yes.
All these auras. And then obviously the Leaky Cauldron has had some changes. Diagon Alley has changed. And though I did mention that even with all the different directors, I do appreciate that, you know, you do get that sense of like the darkness is coming kind of thing, because you do have Christopher Columbus's light, happy, everything is all cheery, and then you get to book six and, you know, you're seeing Diagon Alley with barely any lights in it, and it's just dark and dingy and kind of looking like Nocturne Alley, really.
Good for
Draco. I literally wrote that.
Please, before you write up when they meet Draco, like when they went to Gringotts. Actually, they don't go to Gringotts, do they?
No, I don't know.
But they don't go to Gringotts. Bill gets Harry's gold from Gringotts. But I'm like, considering the security at Gringotts, right? And I know Bill works there, right? He didn't have a letter from Harry giving him permission, giving Gringotts permission to allow Bill into his vault. So was this a plot hole or what? Or was this something that wasn't necessary to mention?
That's true. I wonder, could it be that there's some circumventing thing that happened where we don't get to see that like authority thing going through? Or is it just because Bill has high level authority? I'm not sure.
There's no way he can just walk into someone's vault that. See the events of book 7. When Hermione and, granted they don't work, so they can't just walk into someone's vault, but I think it's the same thing. No employee can walk into someone else's vault and just take money and say, oh, I've taken money here for you. We're going to go shopping.
Yeah, I think it's a plot hole, which could be explained away by saying there's some authority that Harry would have had to give.
Yes.
For that to happen. But then again, Draco.
I was like, hey, Audrey, one half of your favorite ship is at it again. So the first thing Draco says upon seeing the troll in middle of Malkin's is lovely. Pet name for his beloved Hermione. What is it called? What does he call her? Mudblood.
Oh, God.
Hey, Mudblood.
We don't own this version of Draco, guys. We don't. Okay, if anything, I did say, here really begins the fans' obsession with Draco. Before this, it might have been fueled by... maybe the films helped a little bit, because obviously Tom Felton at the time, very adorable looking kid and all that stuff. But in terms of Draco as a character, when people really begin to paint him as the person who does the redemption journey and everything, this is kind of when it begins. Because obviously you're looking at him being featuring a lot more. He does a lot of stuff in here. And it's a lot of mistake stuff that he does that a lot of people then see as the perfect turning point. So a lot of fanfics have him and Hermione either interacting in book six where she's trying to stop him from doing... There is a beautiful fanfic called Clean, I think, where Hermione actually helps him during this time. I think they're having to do a project together. And through that project, she kind of figures out that he's up to something. And then she actually gets up to the point where he's at the tower. And he's about to kill Dumbledore and she convinces him not to. And she convinces Dumbledore to like take him in or something. Well, Dumbledore makes the offer to take him in, but Hermione is instrumental in that. And then they fly off or whatever, like random. But there is that element of like book six being where people start having them interacting a lot more.
Mm.
So it's just interesting that obviously for me, I don't find this version of Draco and Hermione anything appealing because obviously I don't want her to be called Mudblood, but
you got a little bit turned on.
Oh my God, when we talk about the Woman King, just remind me about that turning on thing. I'll show you a clip and I want you to anyway, because I think I sent it to you on Twitter, but anyway,
it takes me a while to open my Twitter.
I'll remind you of it later anyway. But then I did say I do see where people interpret like his interest in Hermione because he had like ammunition for like pretty much all of them, all the three characters, but he still went for Hermione. Like he could have said anything to Harry. He could have said anything to Ron, but he went for Hermione.
Yes.
And I see where people twist that to become what it is. But to be honest with you, for me, book-wise, the more I read this, the more I'm like, oh my God, why am I even into Hermione when they're so problematic book-wise? And then... yeah, Draco is just a bully in the books, pretty much.
I, like, you know, like Harry going head to head with in a verbal spat with the Malfoy's Draco Narcissa. The fact that Narcissa even says that Dumbledore is not always going to be there to protect him, and the fact that she even insinuates or hints towards Lord Voldemort's plan—not really, but she kind of insinuates that Dumbledore's not always going to be there, right? And of course, Harry does not recognize it for the threat that it is, and her mocking Harry about how he will be reunited with Sirius sooner than she would be reunited with Lucius. Like, man. Narcissa,
she's cold.
His neck and just, yay.
But isn't it interesting that in fanfics that I do read, a lot of people also give her a bit of a redemption. They get her to lean more into that motherly love that we saw her leaning into. But now it's more so to redeem her family name. They make her atone and things like that. And usually it's with in relation to Hermione, obviously. But it's
in interesting. The ones I read, it's in relation to her.
Your point was not meant to be made because you couldn't make it.
I wouldn't even say it now.
Always okay. You gotta say it.
My crack shape of, you know, in relation to Harry.
Because it makes sense. Like, it has to be her atoning through liking Harry. Like, because, yeah, there are, I think, fanfics where I read where, like, it mentions her having, like, some interaction with Harry through, like, maybe inviting him for tea and things like that. And then he's the one that first builds up the bond or fame or heals the relationship with the Malfoys. And then through that, like, Hermione might come into play, whatever. Because obviously, I think people always kind of try to lean into, or at least I enjoy when people lean into the fact that because Hermione was tortured at the Malfoy manor, whatever, it's very difficult for her, obviously, to think of going back there or anything like that. So,
ooh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, so it's like they always lean into then Narcissa trying to be forgiven, obviously, by Hermione, but also find her own forgiveness by what she allowed to happen in her home by kind of like making Hermione more comfortable, blah, blah, blah. There's many fanfics that sort of touch on that.
Question, what's your own fanfics, the Dremion fanfics?
Mm.
So in the ones that you've read, where does Hermione ever actually want to visit the Malfoy Manor in any of them? Considering, as you said, happened there.
So, yeah, it's not so much that she wants to, but there's always circumstances where she has to, and she struggles with that, and then she finds herself there and kind of like, one beautiful one that I think was written on is called The Right Thing to Do, very popular in the Hermione world, in fandom space, but they have her go to Malfoy Manor, but Narcissa actually then says, oh, we're redecorating that room. So they turn it into this like beautiful, unrecognizable garden or something that like...
Oh, that is so sweet.
Pretty much gets rid of all that. But then I've also read a very dark fic where Hermione gets tortured still in that room. And it's just like, oh, it's called Manacled, the story. Oh God, that story. I don't even know why I read it. It was just dark. Like it's The Handmaid's Tale, but 10 times worse.
Okay. Damn.
Literally. Like, I was like, I just kept reading
You're like rereading the book 7, like they rewrote book 7.
Up to a point where actually Harry dies in the books.
Of course my Harry
But
died.
The thing is, Hermione has been fighting the battle, but she never gets recognized as one of the trio because this one never goes to the point where the trio is like the golden trio and they're fighting and all that. So because they're, the Dumbledore's army kind of gets broken up very early on. So by the time they get all the wizarding women become handmaids in terms of like how the Handmaid's Tale.
Like a womp story.
Oh, no, not actually. Well, in terms of like very...
Like breaking down.
There's
no... It's not head comfort.
It's not. And I don't know why I read it, but it was too good. I had to keep going. I was like, I just have to keep going. And by the time I got to realize what was going on, I was like, oh, okay. Because it starts in the present of her being a handmaid and she's forgotten. She had a memory loss thing. And then by the time she realizes what's going on, it then goes back to when she actually started the relationship with Draco enough, blah, blah. So it's really difficult to stop. I was like, damn it. But anyway, let's not go into that trap. We're in Wizarding Weasleys, I think. That's where that's
available. Fred and Hermione sitting in a tree. I am reaching.
I do.
I'm reaching, but Hermione complimenting the magical prowess.
I literally wrote that.
Fred offering free products to Hermione as thanks. tried giving Hermione the cream to clear her black eye caused by one of the twins' products when they're back at the barrow. Fred is also like, follow me, ladies, to Hermione, but don't count Ginny, because, you know, she's a sister, to show them more products that they... that she might be interested in. Hey, I was reaching, man, and crack shipping. Don't even worry, girl. But hey.
You are not reaching, because even I was like, it's the fact that Hermione acknowledges their skill.
Yes.
And Fred sort of just being like, oh, thank you.
All this time, she usually just like is looking.
Only that one time in book 5 where she does kind of be like, oh, that's pretty smart. Because they're trying to help her out with her exam situation. Yes. But also kind of get. So. I definitely get you. That's why I wish there was a little bit more. Remember how we searched the fan?
Let's not even talk about, because I'm not even sure at this point which twin dies.
I now think I know which one dies, but I also don't know. We'll see. Once we finish the books, then I'll probably comfortably go into that space.
Yes.
But let's hope it's not this one, because that's the one that kind of has the connection.
Yes. Yeah. Heck, power of crack shipping. The power of
exactly.
crack shipping. The way I can then switch to the other twin.
It's, you know, the way you just realize what you meant. You're like, oh, one is dead. I got another one.
Yes.
I got a replacement. But if anything, I definitely enjoyed like the twins. Like, they're very good wizards, if not great, because what they do is manipulate magic just like any other potion maker, any other spell breaker, any other whatever, and make it into this thing that's quite safe in how it's used, but also quite great magic. I'm sure if you were to equate them to some of the great wizards out there, they would match up, because yes. The amount of knowledge they need to have to
create those
potions,
yes,
these potions, that's
yes. From charms to transfiguration to
everything.
Yes.
Everything. Even the dark arts, because they do dabble in that, like, what is that thing that Harry uses to... It's sort of like a fog thing, but it's like darkness. It creates...
Wait, I thought that was Draco who uses that dark powder, Peruvian powder or something.
No, that's
like that.
Harry. He buys it at this place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Peruvian powder. But that stuff, like, you know, they know all this stuff. They're very smart, honestly. Yeah. Very smart. Harry made a great investment in them. But...
I will move on to when they go to Borgin and Berks. So initially I was like, what was Hermione thinking when she went into Borgin and Berks to investigate what Draco wanted fixed and to keep something safe, blah, 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 right? But then I realized she was probably the only one who could go in and not be immediately recognized.
That's true.
However, her implying that she is Draco's girlfriend, I'm like, hey, somebody must have enjoyed that. It's Fred, your freaking creepy heart.
I didn't even mention that. What I did
I'm
say
surprised.
Was.
I'm surprised.
No, literally, I was like, Hermione is always thinking on her feet, but it's not so successful of a plan this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just because I thought it was funny, but I thought probably just didn't mention it like that. But I do, for us shipping people, it's a very important part. But honestly, I do have to say this. I have now removed myself from the Harry Potter books when I'm reading fan fiction sometimes. Like the canon. I don't know, like you block it out, right?
Yes,
like, you know,
yes.
You just
yeah.
kind of get into this other world that some other author has yeah. created, and it's just...
Especially if they're able to really immerse you in it, like, hey,
the beauty of it.
I hate the Weasleys. I hate Dumbledore. When I'm in fanfic world, like, I struggled when we started reading the books. Because
yeah.
I'm like, I hate these people. I hate Ginny. Who is Ginny? Ginny and Hermione and Harry, I mean? Like, excuse me? Hey, the power of fanfic.
Yes, it converted you.
Yes.
But yeah, I think if anything, there's a confirmation of Draco's dark mark, really, because we do get that reference where he said he's seen, like, showing him, like, something. So there's confirmation there in, like, a roundabout way. And then obviously there's the passing reference to the cabinet in book 2,
mm-hmm.
which then obviously becomes a great plot device in book 6. Which
and I the necklace as well, yes.
Pretty much. So, yeah, I think that's it, really, for this breakdown, at least... this part. We'll be back with some more Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince breakdowns. Just that we're going at a very slow pace, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Any more thoughts on these two chapters that we've talked about?
Nope. I'm good.
That is great, guys. We'll see you again next time.